And if you are as tired as I am, some of you are even wondering why you're here at it tonight. You probably came out of sheer legalism or intimidation. I came because I'm being paid. But it's this time of year that motives get very low. And going on that assumption, I thought we're going to have Vespers light tonight. And I'm going to share my testimony. And in particular, what I'd like to share are... Here's the way I'm going to package it for you. If I could go to college again, here's what I would do all over again. Just like I did it before, or similar to what I did it before. Because those things are paying off to this very day. And I think I can recommend to somebody who's in their late teens and early 20s that if you will apply these biblical truths at this point in your life, when you get to pre-retirement like I am, that you'll be able to look back and to say, this is paying off. Time won't let me go into much detail as far as what I would do differently. There are some things I really would do differently. But since I had a chance to share these same thoughts at Kansas State University a few weeks ago, and I know how much time I've got, I'll only have time to share with you the things that work. There's a biblical principle, though, I'd like to start with, that works. It's kind of like that guy, you know that guy, the bearded fellow that runs the men's clothing store up in the city, and he always ends his commercial by saying, I guarantee it. You seen that ad? Well, this is one of those things God guarantees. It's not that he doesn't guarantee other things, but you can take this one to the bank. I mean, you can write checks on this one. God guarantees this principle. It's said numerous times in the Bible, but Paul says it in Galatians 6:7. Don't be deceived. God will never be mocked at this point. You will never look God in the face and say, God, you dropped the ball at this one, on this one. Whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. Then in the next verse, he says, the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap a life that is eternal in nature. But the person who sows to the flesh will from the flesh reap things that decay. Now, being raised on a farm, let me give you a little bit of my background for those of you that I haven't had the chance to get acquainted with. I was raised on a farm out in the west central part of Kansas. Dad raised wheat, milo, cattle, things like that. We had a few, you know, mad cow disease that's going around. We had a few mad cows, but it wasn't a disease. It was because of the way I was milking them. And so I was raised in that kind of a context, and I learned some things about seeds. Let me share with you four laws of the harvest. And that is, you reap what you sow. So if my father sows wheat, he reaps wheat. If you sow the right things, you reap the right things. And the converse is true. So you reap what you sow. Now this one's important. You reap later than you sow. There's a lot of the Christian life that can get very frustrating if you want results right now. You will sow and sow and sow and sow and wonder, when is this ever going to pay off? I don't see anything coming up. But you will reap. But you will reap later. So I'm able to look back on my college experience and say, I would do those things over again. You're right in the middle of it, and you're not certain what you're doing half the time. I understand how that feels. That's how I felt 20-some years ago. You reap more than you sow. That's the nature of seeds. You plant one grain of wheat and you get a head of wheat that's got 40, 60, 80 berries in it. You plant one kernel of corn and you get an ear of corn, and who knows how many hundreds of seeds are on that ear of corn. If you will sow the right things now, you will reap a tremendous harvest years from now. You will also, this is the fourth law of the harvest, you reap in proportion to what you sow. If you sow just a little bit now, you'll get a little bit in the future. If you sow bountifully now, you will receive a bountiful harvest. So my purpose tonight is to describe my own experience. But really what I'm describing is how God's been faithful to His Word. And I'm urging you not to mimic me, but if there's some things that you're trying to do now that I'm going to affirm tonight, then you take that as a strong affirmation. You keep doing it and do a lot of it. And if there's some things that you hear me say tonight, you feel like, you know, I need to start that, then start it. Don't wait. But sow bountifully, and you'll reap bountifully. Well, my father, as I said, he raised wheat, cattle, other things, and he raised me. When I was a senior in high school, there was one basic goal in my life, and that is I wanted to go to college and get as far away from home as I possibly could. Does anybody else relate to that one? I remember going out one night after a spat my father and I had, shaking my fist to heaven. I didn't know God at the time, but I did tell him. I said, I cannot stand that man. So that was my motivation in going to Kansas State University. There was a local college fairly close. I could have gotten a four-year degree there, and it would have been easy for me to do. Dad would have paid my way, and I could have worked on weekends, and it would have been a good arrangement. But I didn't go there because I wanted to get away from home. Nothing noble at all about my choice of colleges. Probably why they didn't give me a scholarship. But anyway, I went to school at Kansas State University with the sole intention of getting away from my father so he didn't see what I was doing in my free time. And I did everything I could with that freedom I had. I turned 18 in October, took my driver's license down to Aggieville, which is K-State's equivalent to Campus Corner, and I used it at every single bar they'd let me in, and I was qualified now, and drank myself silly that night because I was free in my way of looking at it. That was life for me, and that's why I was in school. Flunking out of calculus, wasting a lot of money. But it was also that freshman year that a Christian organization at that university was trying to share Christ with every freshman at school, much like we try to reach all the, or at least tell all the freshmen at OU about FE, and we try to do that the first semester. That's what they were doing, and I was just one more name on the list. But I sat down and visited with them in the student union. This fellow, he explained the gospel to me in the clearest way I had ever heard it. A church I was raised in didn't talk about faith in Christ much. Folks made me listen to Billy Graham on TV and things like that, but I knew virtually nothing about Christ and how to have eternal life until these two guys, that one afternoon in the student union, read a little booklet to me, and it made sense. They asked me if I'd like to become a Christian, and I said no. Why? I don't know. But I turned them down. But about 2 weeks later, I was on a date with my girlfriend. I was from a Protestant background, and she was from a Catholic background. We were talking about getting married. And so we knew if we got married, we'd either have to, one would have to change, at least our part of the country, you had to kind of go one or the other way. And we wanted to figure out how we're going to raise our kids. And so in the midst of this discussion, I realized, well, my Protestant background isn't helping me a whole lot. And also realized that her Catholic background wasn't helping her much. And I thought, we both need something more than what we've got. And I recalled that conversation that I had with those two guys in college, back at college, and I thought, that's what I want. I want that joy they've got, that confidence they've got, that future they've got. And so that night, while I was on that date, I bowed my head and I prayed a prayer, and Jesus Christ came into my life. And so the first semester of my freshman year, life totally changed. But now I had to do something with that. And bit by bit, God started bringing people into my life. And about my junior year, I decided now's the time to get serious. A guy named Bob Anderson became the BSU director at K-State, and he one day, sitting in a similar area of the student union, challenged me to commit my life to being a disciple of Christ. And I did that. And to this day, I'm still benefiting from those two choices I made in college. There were three things, or three seeds, using that analogy, that I began to do with the help of some other Christians, that if I could do it again, I would do these three things over again. They've been so powerful. As I mentioned, they're shaping my choices today. My mission statement in life is based on these three things. Right now, my mission statement is worded like this. My mission is to seek God with a whole heart and to live an unentangled life. And to do this, I will focus on godly motives, spiritual disciplines, and the support and accountabilities that others give. But out of my relationship with God will flow the grace to fulfill the ministries that God gives me. And at present, my focus is on my family, on discipling young men and women, and on raising up multiplying laborers who will take the gospel to the ends of the earth. Integrated in all of this is the principle of pain and weakness. I will accept and embrace what God brings my way, trusting Him to fulfill His purpose through it. I am committed to finishing my mission well. That's where I'm at now. The seeds of that I'm about to share with you. Here's the first seed. I began to sow then. I chose to love God with a whole heart. Now, I can't say precisely when I made this decision, but sometime between the first and second years of college, I decided there was no turning back, that it was Jesus and only Jesus the rest of my life. Now, that was a frightening thing because I was not raised in a context where I didn't know what faith looked like. My background, there weren't people that I could say, I want to be like him. I was starting something new. But one of the things that described this wholeheartedness, would have to be the word passion. I like the way Louis Giglio defined it for us last semester, or actually earlier this semester, when he said, purpose springs from a personal encounter with God through which we are deeply affected, and as a result, we join Him in His purposes in the world. Well, I began to see that happening in my life. Ran across this quote from Jonathan Edwards the other day. In the 18th century, here's what he said. If we are not earnest in our religion, and when he used the word religion, that was synonymous with our word discipleship. If we are not earnest in our religion, and if our wills and inclinations are not strongly exercised, we are nothing. The importance of religion is so great that no half-hearted exercise will suffice. In nothing is the state of our heart so crucial as in religion, and in nothing is lukewarmness so odious. And I realized while I was in college that I was going to have to be wholehearted. Now, looking back on it, I asked this question. Did I wonder if I was ever committed enough? Yeah, I went through some real guilt trips wondering, am I 100% committed or just 99%? Some of you have got those struggles yourself. I went through that. Did I fear whether I would make it or not? Of course I did. Were there times of confusion? Naturally. Did I stumble and make a fool out of myself at times? Of course. But I was growing in my determination that I wanted to know and love God with all of my being. And God honored that innocent, though immature, wholeheartedness. Verses like Matthew 6:33, seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. Boy, that became real to me. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. I remember praying those verses. I remember praying Luke 9:23, whoever wished to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Luke 14:26 and 27 became real. It says, if anyone comes to me and doesn't hate his own father, mother, wife, children, brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. He who does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Verses like we just sang, Psalm 63:1, O God, thou art my God, I shall seek thee earnestly, my soul thirst for thee, my flesh yearns for thee in a dry and weary land where there's no water. Psalm 42:1, as a deer pants for the water brooks, so my soul pants for thee. Even verses like Psalms 139:23 and 24, I'd routinely pray these to God where it says, search me, O God, know my heart, try me and know my thoughts, see if there's any wicked way in me, and then lead me in the way everlasting. And I saw God honoring these pleas as I was trying to put into words the intent of my heart. There's also a second element which went hand in hand with passion. And it has had paid remarkable dividends over the last few years. And pardon me if you've heard this quote before, but I know some haven't, so I'm going to read it again. You may know me. I'm your constant companion. I'm your greatest helper, and I'm your heaviest burden. I'll push you onward or drag you down to failure. I'm at your command. Half the tasks you do may as well be handed over to me, for I'm able to do them quickly in the same way every time, if that's the way you want it. I'm easily managed. All you have to do is be firm with me. Show me exactly how you want it done, and after a few lessons, I'll do it automatically. I am the servant of all great men and women. And of course, I am the servant of failures as well. I've made all the great individuals who have been great, and I've made all the failures as well. I have all the precision of a marvelous computer with all the intelligence of a human being. You may run me for a prophet, or you may run me to ruin. It makes no difference to me. Be easy with me, and I'll destroy you. Be firm with me, and I will put the world at your feet. My name is what? Habit. And as I look back at college, I didn't realize what God was doing in my life at the time, but looking back on it, I am so thankful that some older Christians urged me to develop some habits in my Christian life. One of them was this. At K-State, there's a building called All Faith Chapel. There's a chapel at this state school. Few people used it, so I kind of had the place to myself whenever I wanted it. And I would go there and enjoy the peace and the solitude, and I would ponder God. It was kind of my sanctuary. I'd take long walks in the cool of the evening. That became a habit. There was a lake north of town, kind of like we have a lake east of town. And I would borrow this guy's old army tent. I'd take Friday nights, sometimes Saturday, you know, or even a whole weekend, and I would go up to that lake, and I would take my Bible, my notebook, and I would just spend time alone with God. And I learned how to do that. Nobody taught me to. I just decided I'm going to learn. I began memorizing whole sections of Scripture. Somebody suggested that, so I thought, well, I'll do it. I realized I needed training, and a man named Bob Anderson offered to give me his life and to teach me everything he could. I had an opportunity to get involved with the BSU and get on their leadership team. I made that commitment. Were there ever times of imbalance with these habits? Certainly. Did I ever get legalistic? More times than I care to count. Did people think that I was odd and extreme? Well, I suppose some did. Yet God knew my heart. He was more delighted to have a whole, though imbalanced heart than a half heart like Lot's wife, who never experienced God because she was so attached to the world. I decided I was going to get serious about 2 Chronicles 16:9. The eyes of the Lord look to and fro throughout the whole earth that He might strongly support those whose heart is completely His. And I make a strong point out of it. I was not good at this. Ask my wife. But they were the seeds that I was planting rather than complacency and lack of discipline. And to this day, those seeds are, I'm harvesting those seeds. I'd do it all over again. Here's the second thing I sowed. I chose to live an unentangled life. Does anybody here know what a defect action level is? This will get your attention. The Food and Drug Administration has these standards for anything produced, in particular food and medicine. A defect action level is a realization that there's no perfect product, so what's the standard going to be? Let me illustrate it this way. In raisins, the government allows 10 or more whole insects or 35 fruit fly eggs per 8 ounces of raisins. That's the defect action level. How about peanut butter? You ready for this? No? All right, let's move on to apple butter. No, peanut butter. You can have 30 or more insect fragments per 100 grams of peanut butter. In apple butter, you can have 5 or more whole or equivalent insects per... What's an equivalent insect? Per 100 grams. Man, I quit apple butter a long time ago after reading this. Asparagus. Now, this will really get you off the stuff. 10% by weight, or 6 or more attached eggs or cocoons per stalk. Macaroni. Now, this will get... Where's Matt?
Yeah.
All right. Macaroni. This will get you off the stuff. 225 insect fragments per 225 grams of macaroni. Read the box before you buy it. You know, defect action level is just as... It's the government's attempt to keep the standard of purity in food. Boy, I'd better move on. It's getting deeper, isn't it? Jesus describes that there are some sin that are like weeds. You know, there's some sin that when it hits, it clobbers you. There's other sin that's very slow, and we kind of leave it alone, we tolerate it, and if we have a high defect action level in our life, what it means is we let the stuff grow and grow and grow, and he warns us that the day comes, it chokes out our life. And so I decided in college that I was going to have to get serious about this. That if I didn't take care of some things when I was in my 20s, they would choke me out when I was in my 40s. For example, through the help of some people who were teaching me how to get my feet on the ground, I realized I needed to have some financial discipline. To this day, I'm reaping the harvest of financial freedom. But it started with financial discipline. For example, I got out of debt as quickly as I could. I got that paid off. I learned in college to be content with what I had, to make do with the guitar I owned instead of always having to buy another one, or the car I own instead of having to buy another one. Learn to trust God for what I need. One of the men that was discipling me said, "Edwards, you need to get your eye on God and not on your income. It's kind of like keeping your eye on the well, not on the bucket." And it was in college that I learned to keep a budget. Jesus said in Luke 16, he says, "If you are faithful in a little thing, you will be faithful later on in much. If you are unfaithful with unrighteous mammon, the same virtues that you used in the way you managed your money will one day pay off in the way you manage the eternal things." God has done this in my life. A second thing that I was helped with in college, there's a harvest today. Christ-centered dating has resulted in marital joy. There were times in college, I mean, Nancy can tell you, I was a jerk most of the time. But at least I was getting my feet on the ground in some things. I decided it's about time, instead of treating girls like I treated them in high school, I needed to treat them the way Christ wanted me to treat them. And one of the things I determined is that I began to notice a pattern. Let me explain it this way. I began to notice a pattern that most of the girls I dated, I didn't date for very long. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to break up with this girl, how do I date so there's few or no regrets? And this question crossed my mind one day. Well, Dave, why don't you assume that the girl you're dating is one day going to marry one of your friends, and then he asks you to be in the wedding? Would you be able to say to her, would you have to make an apology to her on that day, or would you have a clear conscience? Well, that image kind of helped me clarify very quickly how I needed to treat somebody. I mean, that made it very clear what a person should and shouldn't do. What was interesting is that I was in 2 or 3 weddings later on of girls I had dated in college. There were a lot of girls that didn't marry me, weren't there, Nancy? Here's the point. Because I decided I was going to have a high standard of purity, and not just a standard of purity, but I was going to treat them with integrity and treat them with care, There weren't apologies I had to make to those girls or to the men they married. I had a clear conscience. It paid off. God's taught me how to work hard in college instead of being lazy like I'd been in high school. To this day, that's working itself out in a life purpose. High moral standards in college and moral freedom in college has resulted in moral freedom to this day. Learning to ask forgiveness when I'd wronged people. To this day, it's resulting in a clear conscience. And one of the first persons I had to go back to is guess who? My dad. And to this day, my father and I are like this. Well, that was another seed, was learning to live an unentangled life. Was I perfect at it? Of course not. But it worked. What I sowed in college, to this day, I'm reaping. And finally, if I could do it again, I would do this one all over. I would choose to invest my life in making disciples. You remember Louis Giglio's definition of passion? Passion works itself out in mission. Passion that doesn't have a mission is like water that doesn't flow. Water that just sits still goes stagnant. But flowing water stays fresh. And people who are experiencing God and then passing that on to other people experience more of God. But people who try to know God but never pass it on, they just kind of keep it internal, will find after a period of time it just isn't working. God's looking for vessels He can use. My junior year in college, I decided it was about time to move out of the dorms. We found us an inexpensive apartment and a bunch of Christian guys, and we were going to have this phenomenal apartment experience. And we had all these dreams. We were going to pray, and we were going to have this impact, and we were going to do Bible study. And guess what was happening 2 or 3 months later? Nothing. Dishes weren't getting done, beds weren't getting made. And, I mean, it was your normal, I don't know what's normal here, but I know it was normal there. It was a pit, and the morale was low. It just didn't work out. Now, I'm not saying there's something wrong with apartments. What I am contrasting is that it was kind of a monastery in terms of impact. My senior year, I decided, okay, I'll move back in the dorms. But it wasn't just to move in the dorms. It was I wanted to reach some students. And we started a Bible study. And 3 or 4 or 5 guys became Christians. And they're still walking with God to this day. One of those guys is a farmer in western Kansas. But the way he uses his agriculture to reach the world, since K-State is an ag school, and there's a lot of international students there, what he and his wife do is they have international students on the farm over holidays. Well, these international students love to come and see an American farm. That's the reason they went to Kansas State. That's what they're there to study. And so they have this ministry to the world at Salina, Kansas. And that all came out of a Bible study. In the next 2 years, after college, I asked God to give me some men that I could disciple. One of the things that came out of that was a young man named Brad, who lived in a fraternity. And then we started working with Brad. Brad starts a Bible study. And that Bible study went on with a non-broken annual study. Until about 2 years ago, I guess it was. Year after year after year after year after year, guys kept coming out of that place. And where did it start? Well, Don Drum and I, you don't know Don, but Don Drum and I used to, one summer, we would go out north of Manhattan, Kansas. There's a place where the early part of the night, people would go up there and park and look over the city, and we'd go up there early in the morning, and it was quiet, and we had the place to ourselves. And so we'd get up about 5 in the morning, about once or twice a week, and we'd go up there and we'd claim the school for Christ, and we'd pray that God would raise up some men. We didn't know what else to pray. We just took promises out of the Bible and asked God to fulfill them. And God answered that prayer with Brad Wagner, that and several other guys. Now, what I'm describing is not something that Don and I knew to do. It's just something we stumbled along and were obedient to God. And to this day, the seeds of learning to reach people and make disciples that I sowed in college, I'm harvesting that to this day. And I would urge you to sow a generous supply of those seeds yourself. Maybe another time I'll have time to share with you that if I could do it over again, what were some big mistakes I wish I could go back and correct. But I'm going to stop early tonight. Did this make sense? Are there any questions? Well, if the Lord doesn't come back for another few years, I would hope there would be a significant number of people who are in this room right now who would be able to come back to this school. You'd be able to walk across that campus. You'd be able to walk through those dorms. You'd be able to walk through those buildings. And you'd be able to say, I began some things while I was in college that 20 years later, I am harvesting a bountiful harvest of righteousness. God, thank you for what you did in college. You will look back and you will see all sorts of things you could have done better if you could do them again. But at least you did those things. And I would hope that there would just be a significant number of people in this room. And it was a tremendous joy for me a few months ago to walk across Kansas State University and to think of what God did and to thank Him, because He was the source of it all, just like He's the source of it all now. Well, are there announcements? Okay. Well, Mark's got a couple of announcements to make. There might be a song or two more, I'm not sure. And then we're going to stop early tonight. So, Mark, it's all yours.